It's not unusual for somebody to remark to me after a sermon, "Wow, you really stretched me there," or hadn't thought about it that way before. That's on the plus side. Conversely, it's not unusual for somebody to remark to me, "In essence, I'd appreciate it if you'd be more practical." That's the double-edged sword of my tendency to abstraction. On the upside, it can help you see something in a fresh light, think about it in a new way. On the downside, it can come across as blah, 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 blah. You wanted directions to the bakery, and I gave you a map of the interstate freeway system. I am aware of this problem, and I try to keep myself in check. But I'm crafty, and sometimes I slip right by me. However, if you're on the side of the aisle that wishes I would be more practical, I have got good news for you today. You want practical? I got practical. From our text, James chapter 1, verses 18 through 21, a message that is, oh, so practical. The message is, calm down, shut up, and pay attention. You wanted practical. You say, "Well, that's too practical. Calm down, shut up, and pay attention is ridiculously practical. I don't want it that practical." Even though it's only three things to do, it may seem like three too many, or at least two too many. Calming down, shutting up, and paying attention all at once could bring the whole system down, you know, crash things beyond repair. So if calm down, shut up, and pay attention is too practical, I have a practical solution. Don't worry about all three. You can just pick one. And it doesn't even matter which one you pick. You could write calm down, shut up, and pay attention on three separate slips of paper, drop them in a hat, you know, look the other way, rustle them around, just pull out one. If it says calm down, calm down. If it says shut up, shut up. If it says pay attention, pay attention. Doesn't matter which one you pick because they're all connected. They all work together. Calming down will lead you to pay attention. Paying attention will help you to shut up. Shutting up will enable you to calm down round and around in a very practical swirl. One of the problems with being so practical is it looks like I'm standing up here telling you what to do. And you could be pardoned for thinking, "Well, it's easy enough for you to stand up there and tell me to calm down, shut up, and pay attention. How about you sit down and I stand up and tell you to calm down, shut up, and pay attention?" That's fair enough. And whatever else would pertain to that arrangement, it would certainly be practical. All kidding aside, this is one of the great challenges of preaching. The more practical, the more directive I as a preacher am, the more it is slash appears to be me telling you what to do. Now note I said is slash appears to be. It certainly is in the sense that I am me, you are of course you, I'm talking, you're listening, and I'm unambiguously saying, calm down, shut up, and pay attention. So at that superficial level, I am telling you what to do. But I know, and I hope you know, this is not Chris Stewart telling your name here to calm down, shut up, and pay attention. It's me telling you that God is telling us to calm down, shut up, and pay attention. In James chapter 3, verse 1, he says, "My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment." The choice to stand up and tell people what God says has ramifications. Certain terms and conditions apply. You may not think much about that, but I do. we'll be doing a sermon on that single verse. I'll be preaching it, Lord willing, October 30th. That'll be interesting. Can't wait to see what I have to say. But the point is, even though it superficially appears to be me telling you to calm down, shut up, and pay attention, the reality is I'm telling you, God is telling us, calm down, shut up, and pay attention. We're in James 1, 18 through 21, and it's quite possible you have read the passage and did not catch calm down, shut up, and pay attention. It's verse 19, which reads, "So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath." Swift to hear. That's pay attention. Slow to speak. That's shut up. And slow to wrath. That's calm down. I have updated, paraphrased swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath into calm down, shut up, and pay attention. In doing so, I also reversed the order, rephrased in the same order, swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, would be pay attention, shut up, and calm down. It's not a big deal about the order. It just seemed to me calm down, shut up, and pay attention rolled off the tongue a little easier than pay attention, shut up, and calm down. Matter of opinion. Ultimately, it does not matter because they're interconnected. Any one will lead you to the other two. So we're talking about James chapter 1, verse 19. "So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath," which I have updated to, "my beloved brethren and sistern, calm down, shut up, and pay attention." Of course, the passage says more than that. James 1, 18 to 21 reads, "Of his own will he brought us forth by the word of truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. For the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Therefore, lay aside all filthiness and overflow of wickedness, and receive with meekness the implanted word which is able to save your souls." I want to say a word about sermon structure here. I operate on the principle that there may be several ways to preach a particular passage. That is, there's not one right way with all the other ones being wrong. Various factors, circumstances, discernment, that kind of stuff comes into play. I like to say a dozen different preachers could preach a dozen different sermons on the same text, and they could all be equally right and good. Heaven knows they could all be equally bad, but that's not the point. The point is a passage can legitimately be preached in various ways. For example, this text. If you look at verses 18 and 21, you'll see that the word is explicit. Verse 18, "Of his own will he brought us forth by the word of truth." Verse 21, "Receive with meekness the implanted word which is able to save your souls." In between are the commands, "Be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath," or as I've phrased them, "Calm down, shut up, and pay attention." A sermon on this passage could quite legitimately be about the word. He brought us forth by the word. We should meekly receive the implanted word. In that approach, swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath would be examples of the effect of the word in our lives. Measures by which we'd evaluate our reception of the implanted word. The swifter we are to hear, the slower we are to speak, and the slower we are to wrath, the more the implanted word is growing in us, saving our souls. And then conversely, the slower we are to hear, the swifter we are to speak, and the swifter we are to wrath, the less the implanted word is growing in us, etc., etc. That sermon from this text would be about the word, and the behavior, swift, slow, slow, would subordinately illustrate, for better or worse, how the Word was doing in our lives. Perfectly legitimate sermon, but I've chosen to do the sermon about the behavior. So we're going to talk about being swift to hear, a.k.a. paying attention, being slow to speak, a.k.a. shutting up, and being slow to wrath, a.k.a. calming down. And in the remote contingency that any of us should need to improve in any of these areas, even ever so slightly, just meekly receive the implanted word, which can save your souls. All I'm saying is the text is like a stick. You can pick it up from one end or the other. Pick it up from the word end, you get that sermon. I chose to pick it up from the behavior end, so we're doing this sermon. So swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath is our focus. So then, my beloved brethren and sistern, let's get practical. Let everyone be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath, or as I have provocatively rephrased it, calm down, shut up, and pay attention. And we'll address them in order of my rephrasing, beginning with calm down, that is, slow to wrath. And let's acknowledge, first off, the only thing controversial about any of this is the way I rephrased it. You may find calm down, shut up, and pay attention to be objectionable or condescending or offensive in any particular way, but being swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath are unarguably good things. You couldn't possibly be opposed to them. It's like fruit of the Spirit, Galatians 5:22, love, joy, peace. You know, you may or may not possess them. A preacher may preach about them well or poorly. You could even preach about them offensively, but you couldn't possibly be opposed to love, joy, and peace. They're unarguably good. Likewise, being swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath are clearly things we should aim for, character traits we should be developing. So even if my approach is getting in your way a little bit, don't let that blind you to the fact that you ought to be slow to wrath, or as I'm phrasing it, calm down. Everybody knows that's a good thing. Well, it's late September and I really should be back at school. But that also means the presidential election is nearing, looming. As the practical choice between the Donald and the Hillary bears down on us, one of the big arguments against Trump is that he's not calm enough. He doesn't have the proper temperament. He is not, in terms of our text, slow to wrath, but rather quick to wrath. Therefore, he should not be the president. I am not making an argument for or against Trump. I'm just making the point that the fact that Trump's temperament is an issue, Trump's temperament, try saying that fast three times. Anyway, the fact that it is an issue shows that everybody understands being slow to wrath is a desirable quality. But since I brought the election up, I do want to say something about it. I want to make a statement for the record. Today is Sunday, September 25th, 2016. The election is Tuesday, November 8th. That is 7 weeks and 2 days from today. I'm going to tell you what I expect to occur. This is not a prophecy. I do not have a supernatural revelation from God about the future. Rest assured, should God ever give me one of those, you'll be the first to know. But this is not one of those, though it is a prediction of sorts. It's a Sons of Issachar sort of thing. And by using the phrase Sons of Issachar, I'm alluding to 1 Chronicles chapter 12, which tells how King David selected and grew his army, and it says of the sons of Judah, so many of the sons of Simeon, so many all through the 12 tribes, making here and there a comment about the men of the tribe. 1 Chronicles 12:32 says, of the sons of Issachar who had understanding of the times to know what Israel ought to do, their chiefs were 200. The sons of Issachar had understanding of the times. They knew what was going on. so they knew what to do, how to act wisely. And when I say it's a Sons of Issachar thing, I'm saying based on my understanding of the times, based on my understanding of what's going on, this is what I expect to occur. I am not a prophet. This is not a prophecy. It's important to understand that distinction. It's what I anticipate. I'll be surprised if something like it does not occur. The election will be close, and the result will be disputed. Electronically disputed. Remember the 2000 election. Bush and Gore, Florida, the National Guards mobilized and standing in front of the Florida Supreme Court, recounts with hanging chads. They were looking at physical cards people had voted with. On December 12th, the U.S. Supreme Court decided Bush was the president. I expect something similar, except this time the argument will not be about hanging chads. Because of the pervasive use and abuse of digital technology, this argument is going to be about ones and zeros. Electronic bits rather than hanging chads, and you can see there's going to be a problem with that. You and I and any common citizen can understand and evaluate to our own satisfaction a card, how it got punched and where it got punched. We can see it, we can touch it, we can examine it. But you and I and common citizens cannot evaluate to our own satisfaction the internet and data transfers and hacking and all the stuff that pertains to digital information. In the 2000 election, the recounts were done by common citizens of both parties examining tangible, physical evidence. The dispute I foresee is a recount that will be done by information technology experts, IT guys, and their arguments will be settled by judges. And whatever shape the dispute takes, the net result will be, Hillary, you've got mail on the server in your bathroom, Clinton, will be the next and first digitally certified president. So, wrapping up the sidebar, I am not a prophet, this is not a prophecy. It is what I anticipate occurring based on my understanding of the times. Today is September 25th, 2016, and I'm saying what I expect is, one, the election will be close and the results will be disputed. Two, the dispute will revolve around electronic data, not physical evidence. Three, IT experts and judges will determine who won. And four, what they will determine is that Hillary won. Now, calm down. That's what the sermon is about. Remember, we started out with calm down. It's the first part of the message. We got onto the election because I brought up questions about Trump's temperament to make the point that everybody agrees being slow to wrath is a good thing. I just gave you a prediction, not a supernatural prophecy, but a Sons of Issachar prediction about the election. Because it's a prediction, I freely acknowledge it may not come to pass. We shall see. But here's a prediction that will come to pass. A statement so trustworthy it might as well be prophecy, even though it's not, and that is, things are going to happen that will make you angry, make you mad, incline you to wrath. Locally and globally, politically and economically, personally and professionally, as the bumper sticker says, stuff happens. Bad stuff. Stupid stuff. Hurtful stuff that makes you mad, makes you angry, tempts you to wrath quickly. No big mystery here. Every human experiences this and understands it. Some of you might be saying, oh, I don't get angry, I get depressed. You know the saying, depression is anger turned inward. I like the quip, depression is anger without enthusiasm. We'll avoid psychoanalyzing the matter. Suffice it to say, if you're depressed, things are not going your way, and if we poked and prodded, we'd find, at whatever level, anger. Now, it's important to understand anger in and of itself is not wrong. It is a perfectly reasonable and appropriate response to a lot of what goes on in this world. The problem is, what with the world, the flesh, and the devil, our anger, though it energizes us, gets us going, it generally gets us going in the wrong direction. Oh, we're going to do something about it. Steps will be taken. But those steps aren't going to take us where we ought to go. The action won't produce the results we want or ought to want. Of swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath is the only one James expands on. Verse 19, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. Verse 20, for the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Now, human wrath produces all sorts of things. It may produce vengeance. It may produce temporary satisfaction. It will almost certainly produce a response. It may produce all kinds of things, but there is one thing it will never produce, and that is the righteousness of God, which is above all what we are to seek. The Master said, Matthew 6:33, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. All the things we're worried about, all the things we're angry about, God will take care of if and as we seek first his righteousness. Which in our immediate context means if and as we are slow to wrath. Much more could be said, but in the interest of covering our bases, we transition from calm down to shut up. I am now going to perform the ironic act of talking about not talking. I'm going to go on and on about shutting up. I seriously considered 5 minutes of silence for this segment, but I elected to embrace the paradox and talk about not talking. The first thing I'll point out is the commands be swift to hear and slow to speak, in my phrasing, shut up and pay attention, are two sides of one coin, different ends of one stick. Talking is one thing, expressing yourself, stating your opinion, giving your two cents worth. It has its time and its place. James does not say never speak. He says be slow to speak. One reason being, once you begin to speak, you cannot possibly listen. You know how we sometimes get the voice through the monitors? I don't know if this is actually the case, but it seems to me that never happens when anybody else is preaching. It only happens to me. It's like he's got a schedule going, oh, Chris is up. Click, click, click. Time to talk to the world. Anyway, when that happens, you sitting there, you got two sources of input, me and whatever that is, and you may be able to sort that out or not sort it out. But on my end, I'm standing up here speaking. I got something going out. If anything starts coming in, it just about makes my head explode. The degree to which you are talking is the precise degree to which you are not listening. And conversely, the degree to which you are listening, to that exact degree, you will not be listening. Talking. It's not tricky. It's not complex. There is nowhere to get lost in this process. It's a simple inversion like a teeter-totter. Talking up, listening down. Talking down, listening up. James wants us to pay attention in the words of the text to be swift to hear. So shutting up, talking down, in the words of the text, being slow to speak, is a necessary precondition. James is going to come back to the tongue again and again. He's got strident words about bridling the tongue. By the time we get to chapter 3, he will be saying, It starts a forest fire and then burns the world down, having itself been ignited by hell. So when he says, be slow to speak, this is pretty tame stuff. You know, this is like a little warm-up, a little preparation for what's coming down the line. But if we will take it to heart, if we will actually be slow to speak here in chapter 1, we won't be in near as much trouble. We won't be in anywhere near as deep a hole when we get later into the book and James really begins to spread himself on the subject. But it's not just James. We've been warned many times in Scripture about our words. For example, Ecclesiastes 5, 1 through 3. Walk prudently when you go to the house of God and draw near to hear rather than to give the sacrifice of fools. And the sacrifice of fools there is their words. It's a rash vow in context, but it's really their plethora of words. He says, for they do not know that they do evil. Do not be rash with your mouth, and let not your heart utter anything hastily before God. For God is in heaven, and you are on earth. Therefore, let your words be few. For a dream comes through much activity, and a fool's voice is known by his many words. You probably know the saying, it's better to keep your mouth shut and be thought of as a fool than to open it and erase all doubt. Okay. I'm pretty sure that comes directly from the Bible. It's a rephrasing of Proverbs 17:28. Even a fool is counted wise if he holds his peace. When he shuts his lips, he is considered perceptive. It's real simple. A closed mouth gathers no feet. I made a point to write down some of the cute, insightful things my girls said as they were growing up. And when Sophie was 7, Ari was 5, and Livy was 3, Livy had just moved into the big girl's bedroom, and it was a big deal, because it was the first time they were all sleeping together. And after lights out, there was some talking and ruckus, and Livy sent out a distress call, and I stuck my head in and asked what the problem was. 3 years old, Olivia looks at me and says, tell Ari, close mouth. Folks, a three-year-old knows how to fix this problem. I've rephrased slow to speak as shut up. It could just as easily have been rephrased, tell people close mouth. It really is that simple. However, there's a potential problem, a trap we need to avoid. It is fundamentally unsound to implement a negation, by which I mean to focus on what you are not doing, in this case, not talking. The internal dialogue, something like, I am keeping my mouth shut, I am keeping my mouth shut, I am keeping my mouth shut, that is strictly a short-term emergency approach. It will not work in the long haul. In order to be fundamentally sound, that is, pursue a course that will work over the long haul, you have to focus on what you are doing. If you are trying not to think about flying elephants, Dumbo, or whatever, you're not going to get very far with the mantra, I am not thinking about flying elephants, I am not thinking about flying elephants, I am not thinking about flying elephants. The obvious solution is to think about something else. And it makes Dumbo and all the other flying elephants just disappear as if by magic. That's all I'm saying. Don't set out with the purpose of not talking. What purpose should we have? What's the positive thing we should be doing? James is ahead of the curve on this. Because though it's last on my rephrased list, it's first in the actual text. My beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear. Or as I've rephrased it, pay attention. That's the thing we are doing. Attending to that will keep us out of the negative loop of not talking. Being swift to hear, what does that mean? The directions be slow to speak and slow to wrath are immediately graspable because talking and being angry are things we do, actions we perform. Being swift to hear requires a little more reflection, a little more analysis, because listening appears to be doing nothing. It's actually very active. It is, in fact, more active than talking and more active than being angry, but it doesn't look that way. Imagine three guys here. This guy's talking, this guy's angry, this guy's listening. Okay? We have observers come in, we ask them, what's this guy doing? They'd say, he's talking. Say, what's this guy doing? They'd say, he's angry. We ask them what this guy's doing, they would be tempted to say he isn't doing anything. He's just standing there. That's what they'd be tempted to say. Listening does not appear to be an action, but that's just the surface. In reality, it is more active. Requires more effort and more attention than either speech or anger. And it takes all that energy and effort because listening involves self-control, and talking and being angry do not. Talking just happens. It's natural. Being angry just happens. It's natural. Listening does not just happen. It is not natural. Even though it looks like doing nothing, in reality it requires more effort and more skill than talking or anger. Let everyone be swift to hear. What's that mean? Well, I'll tell you what it does not mean. It does not mean listening quickly. Like most of you, I walk around with a handheld computer, a smartphone. There is far more computing power in this one device than existed on the entire planet 50 years ago. Far more computing power in this than was used to send a man to the moon. But like most of you, it doesn't matter to me however many thousand things this actually does. I use it to do about half a dozen. But one of the things I use it to do is listen to sermons, podcasts, any kind of books, any kind of audio material. And my app has a function that permits me to listen to it at increased speed. I can listen to it at natural speed, 1.25, 1.5, 1.75, all the way up to double speed. So I can listen to a 30-minute podcast in 15 minutes. It's pretty cool. I use that function a lot. I can listen quickly. That is not what James is talking about when he says be swift to hear. He's not talking about digesting a 30-minute sermon in 15 minutes or a 20-minute TED Talk in 10 minutes. Being swift to hear is an attitude, a perspective, a capacity. I rephrased it as pay attention. And what I love about the phrase pay attention is the word pay. Attention is costly. It takes effort. It's an investment. You have to pay it. We imagined our three guys talking, angry, and listening. If instead of listening, the third guy was actually doing nothing, daydreaming or whatever, he might look no different. But if we could see inside, measure his spirit, his heart, when he is listening, we would see a vast difference, a world of difference. Compassion, concern, desire. That is what being swift to hear is about. Whether it's hearing from God, whom we are to love with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, or hearing from our neighbor, whom we are to love as we love ourselves. The willingness and desire to care about them, their experience, their story, takes us out of ourselves. And God is very eager to help us on that journey. And in doing so, we'll find ourselves naturally talking less and surprisingly less angry. Beloved, let us all be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. Lord, thank you for the clarity of your word. We know we're in for a long haul here with James. With his, he is so direct and so clear. But we thank you for his color. We thank you for his concern. And Lord, we've implanted the word. We have attended to your word that tells us to be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. May that grow. May that expand in our lives for your glory. Amen.